Is everything good, John?
Everything's perfect.
So, before we get going, where did the name... Is it? I always fuck this up because I'm ADD.
Don't ruin the... Which came first, the mountains, the mullets, or the America?
Man, what a question. So I spend a lot of time driving down the road. And when I put up my first video, they got some success. I was like, oh man, if I'm going to do this, I need a channel name. So I'm driving down the road. I wanted something catchy. And mm-hmm. I love the West. So I'm like, oh, there's some mountains. I'm like, oh, I have a mullet. And then I'm like, boom, now I need a third term. America.
It does flow very well.
Yeah, no, I legit was just driving down the road one day, and there were mountains outside the window, and had the mullet. So
mullet blowing in the wind.
Yeah, it kind of flows. Yeah, so there's actually no real reason other than I thought it sounded cool.
You can't have a mullet and not think stuff like America.
that's where she came from. So,
do you feel obligated to keep the mullet for like
100%?
You cut your hair not that long ago, right?
And I have to.
I remember seeing, like, there was people in the comments like, where's your mullet, dude?
Yeah, so I work a corporate job, so I have to have a level of, like, professionalism. Uh-huh. So I definitely have to keep it maybe collar length or so, but 100% yes. I have to have the mullet now for the channel.
Yes, you're stuck in that forever now.
Yeah.
It's crazy how the whole mullet trend came back. Like, I was, this was probably before you was born when mullets were cool.
It was when I was a kid because my dad had one.
Oh, Billy Ray.
Dude, it, yeah, I don't know. Actually, so the mullet was a bet from a coworker. So through my job, through my actual work, we were going to go work at a farm show. You know, thousands of visitors were going to come out to this farm show. I can't remember what the bet was, but whatever it was, like, dude, you're not going to grow a mullet. I'm like, yeah, I definitely will.
Turns out.
Yeah. So I want to say it was the summer of 2017. I roll into this farm show rocking a mullet and it's become a part of me.
Yeah. You can't get rid of it now. It's there. It's part of you.
No.
It's who you are. So, where to start? Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in North Georgia, outside of Atlanta, a town called Cumming. So it's about an hour north of Atlanta.
I'm not a world traveler. I'm just like, yeah, Georgia.
Yeah. A lot of trees and not a lot of long range shooting.
So grew up there. I'm assuming you graduated high school there. Like, where? Okay, so did you go to college or anything like that? Or, you know, where did life take you from there?
Yeah, so I grew up in North Georgia and went to high school there in Cumming or in Forsyth County, Georgia. And then I went to college in North Georgia at the University of North Georgia, a little bit further north from there. And I stayed there until I was in my late 20s. Can't remember exactly how old I was, but it was 2018. So late 20s, 2018 timeframe. Through my work, I had an opportunity to move out west and took that. And I've been out there now going on right at 6 years. So kind of went, you know, never thought I would move. Love Georgia. Georgia's my home. That's where my family is. That's where my roots are.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did a photo shoot out in Washington where I'm at now and fell in love with the area. For definitely the work side of things, selling ag equipment and that kind of, it's a huge market for that.
Right.
But then personally, I realized there's a ton of open space and I could probably do very well with long range shooting out here. So,
right. So, I mean, during like when you was growing up, high school and stuff, like, did y'all do any hunting or anything like that? Did y'all do any sport shooting or anything like that?
A lot of sport shooting. So definitely don't have a hunting background. You know, I've been hunting maybe with my buddies a couple of times. We got some hogs once, and then this last fall I was a part of an elk hunt with some friends. But myself, I've never hunted. I've never taken an animal. Shooting-wise, definitely we shot a lot of recreational-type stuff, 22s with buddies, shotguns with buddies, pistols with buddies. And then as I got into my college years, I really got into the long-range shooting piece. So my dad's the one kind of got me into it, the shooting thing. And then he used to talk about his time in the military when they would shoot long-range. And we had a range in Georgia that was about 2.5 hours to the east of us where we could get out to 600 to 700 yards. And the couple times we went over there, I realized I love long range shooting.
Right.
And I wanted to do whatever I could to get better at that and to pursue that. And the way to do that at that time when I was in college was to shoot matches. So where I grew up, I had access to 200 to 300 yards where I could do short range practice. And then when I wanted to shoot long range, I would go shoot matches. And this was actually I would say prior to the PRS series. So the PRS series, I remember when it was kind of becoming a thing.
Right.
We were shooting some team matches. Actually, my buddy and I, we shot our first match. I want to say it was 2010 era in Tennessee. It was a team match and finished dead last. But man, I got to shoot 1,000 yards. We made some hits out there, had a blast. And then from there, I want to do better and I want to learn to shoot better. Mm-hmm. And I did whatever I could to do that. So
it's pretty interesting. Most people cut their teeth hunting, especially being in Georgia.
Oh, for sure.
You would just assume that that's, you know, and it's pretty interesting that you're a lot of people. I mean, like myself, I got eat up with the shooting bug and long range bug because of hunting. Mm-hmm. Like I wanted to become a more proficient marksman because of hunting. It's just, you don't hear, especially people from the South, you don't hear many people getting into it without like this extensive hunting background.
Yeah.
Was it just something y'all didn't do, or was it something that just didn't interest you, or
yeah, so
did
my
dad do any hunting?
No, my dad's a fisherman.
Oh.
Yeah, so he, my dad spends his time fishing. Oh, I used to fish God. With him. So definitely, like, if it was an outdoors type activity, we would go fishing.
Right.
But then myself, I just think it's cool to put a little, you know, projectile yeah. on a target downrange.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
what type of shooting did y'all primarily do? Like silhouette style shooting, like when you're a kid and all that kind of stuff?
Man.
Or,
man, I probably still have the highest round count on BB, right? Like a Daisy Red Ryder BB
yeah.
gun.
Yeah.
And I think it was a Daisy kind of pump action pellet mm-hmm. rifle. I mean, thousands of those. I would shoot off my grandmother's back porch at Coke cans.
Yeah.
So maybe 25 yards was like a long shot, but that's right. where I learned, you know, that's where you learned how that pellet was flying.
Mm-hmm.
That's how, you know, trigger control.
Any kind of school programs y'all got into or anything
no.
like that?
No.
See, a common thing out here is like 4-H shooting and all kinds of shit. Like there's all kinds of stuff out here.
Yep.
Just if that shit existed where I lived, which is East Texas, boo. It was in our radar. Like we played all the sports and we hunted, but out here, like you get all these 4-H shooting, sports for kids and all kinds of stuff. Like it's pretty cool. And you know, a lot of these people out here are some of the best natural point of aim shots I've seen.
Yep.
Like they're mostly all varmint hunters. They grew up shooting shitloads of rabbits. And almost all of them grew up going through that 4-H shooting program, which is like 22s, like the, What's the fancy 22 shooting called?
Or they, like an RL-22?
No, they have like the fancy glove and Schultz.
I know what it's
and,
called.
Like that's the style of shooting.
Like high power type.
Yes,
22.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Like that's still very prevalent out in these parts, which I think is cool shit. Like I said, I would love to have done something like that when I was a kid.
Wait, how old are you?
Me, I'm 34.
34? So close. Were you radicalized with guns via video games?
Oh, for sure. 100%.
Yeah. See, there's what you're missing.
Yeah.
Which game was it for you that really...
Let me think. Probably the first one I remember really getting into was, I forgot what it was called. It was Medal of Honor. It was a World War II game.
Mm-hmm.
Medal of Honor. And then definitely like original Call of Duty.
Like COD 4.
Counter-Strike
yeah.
Was a game back in the day. Halo, we used to...
Is that to, what you... Is that, was it the op? Was it the L96 that got you?
Yeah. Man, my memory's not that good.
Okay, never mind. I'm autistic, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's not that nerdy, John.
But no, there was like Rainbow Six. There was Ghost Recon. Oh, I played
Primo.
A ton of games.
Those are like the... Honestly, a lot of the guys I know that are hardcore is all like Rainbow Six, Ghost Recon,
yeah,
all that stuff.
Original stuff. Me and my buddies, we would go over and play video games together.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, depending on who the friend was, we would go out and actually shoot.
Yeah.
And I've always been into the practical type shooting. So I like to, like the high power thing's not really my
right.
game. So
right.
I like to be able to like brace off of a tree and hit that Coke can over there.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just having like little impromptu competitions with our buddies.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a pistol, I usually got smoked by the other guys, but rifle, I could hold my own. So
pistols for women.
Yeah. Pistol, you've got a problem. Rifle, they've got a problem. So
exactly.
Yeah.
So you moved out west, Washington.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Eastern Washington.
When did, obviously you're still shooting the whole time and all that stuff. When did you decide, like, I'm going to put this on YouTube?
Yeah, that's a great question.
When did that come along?
So my college years up until when I moved out west, I was really into shooting what became PRS.
Mm.
It was never, like, blowing it out of the water, but I was competitive and I had fun. Then I moved out west, and my goal when I got out west was I wanted to shoot a mile. So like I moved out there, Neil, and I want to shoot a mile. And I was able to do that. I realized when I got out west, though, there was way more time working and much less time reloading, load developing, practicing. So I kind of backed away from the match shooting. Mm-hmm. And I got hooked up with some farmers that had some really cool places to shoot, and I just started plinking around. I can't remember what inspired me to do it, but my first video that actually got some views and got subscribers, I had the FN SCAR 20S and 6.5 Creedmoor, and I had the SR 25 and 6.5 Creedmoor. And I just threw together some footage, looking back, not even that great of a video. It's like 12 minutes long. And I just threw it on YouTube because I thought, I'd seen in the forums, I had seen people asking questions how these two stacked up. So I said, I'll make a video. I've got both rifles. We'll drop it on there and see what happens. And it started to get some traction. And this would have been like 2021, probably the November 2021, probably. I put this video out, started getting traction. And as I started getting positive comments and multiple subscribers per day, I was like, man, this might actually be something I could do.
Right.
And then a couple months later, I decided to actually give it a go. I got a Barrett MRAD that was the Mark 22. It had just won the Mark 22 contract. So I said, well, this is kind of a relevant rifle. I put that video out and the momentum continued. Mm-hmm. And as I started to see that momentum grow with those videos, I decided just to keep pumping out content. And since then, it's been growth the whole time.
So as far as, are you into the cloning fad and all that stuff?
Loosely?
I was going to say, in my opinion, as far as your channel goes, you got this perfect mixture going between bolt guns and semi-autos. But also, you're hitting that market of the people that really, a lot of the gun type people that consume YouTube. You're not just going out there like, this is the same old bolt gun over and over. Like, this is something that's kind of relevant, like much like that one you're just talking about. And then you'll jump to a bolt gun, you'll try different barreling, stuff like that. Was this by design or was this by, I think this is cool, I'm going to do this?
Very much, I think this is cool. Yeah, so definitely now I do have like a content plan that I think about when I make my videos. But ultimately, I want to have fun making the video.
Right. You want to do stuff that's fun to you.
Yeah. I want to shoot firearms that I think are cool. Mm-hmm. And I want to make content that I would want to watch. And so far, the mixture there seems to be working. So.
Right.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
No, definitely not a cloner. Like, I'm not out here looking at the little UID labels or whatever they're called on there. And I'm not, you know, arguing about what brand of pistol grip you have.
What is SBR?
Yeah. Like,
what is a DMR?
That's not really my... Now, that I might do a video on. But that's not really my thing. Like, I don't want to get into the nitty-gritty.
Right.
But I do think the base platforms are cool.
Yeah.
And I definitely enjoy shooting those type rifles or firearms.
So, do you just not hunt because you don't hunt? Or do you dislike hunting?
Oh, no. I'm fine with hunting. And, like, man, I went on a... So, I don't really hunt. That's actually a good question. I don't really hunt because I spend all of my time and energy long-range shooting.
Right.
And that's where I want to spend my time and energy. If I have another hobby, then I have to like split.
Oh, yes. It's very tough.
Yeah. So I don't hunt because I have never been around hunting.
Right.
Like I went on an elk hunt back in October with some buddies and watched and had an absolute blast. It was the first time getting to see two monster elks up close. Mm-hmm. And that was awesome.
So did they shoot them with a rifle or was it bow? Or
they
what,
got them with they rifles. Go? They got them with 300 Win Mag.
Of course.
Yep. Yeah, 300 Win Mag. I think this is kind of wild. One of them was shot at like maybe 50 yards.
Yeah.
And then the other one, I want to say they took it about 300.
Yeah.
So,
wait till you go on a long range hunt. That's a lot of fun.
Well, so what I would enjoy doing might be that. So I don't have the history of hunting, but I definitely enjoy the sport and understand, you know, it's a whole industry out there that people love doing.
Yeah.
But for myself, I like long range shooting.
Yeah.
Just target shooting. Yeah. And competing. I enjoy competing.
What is, I'm just kind of all over the place right now. I have so many questions. What is your favorite, should I wait for the 12 minute talk on this? Yeah, fuck it.
Let's go.
What is your favorite platform, semi-automatic or bolt action?
Semi-auto, 100%. 100%.
Dude, so are why?
So I, why? So, you know, I mentioned that I was shooting matches prior to where I believe the PRS series was started, and that was with my LMT MWS. So I was like the lone guy out there shooting an autoloader in these precision rifle matches.
Back in the day when they're like, you can't shoot precision with an autoloader.
And I don't know. I just like shooting ARs. I think it's fun. Bolt guns are cool, but to me, the ARs are cooler and a little bit more difficult to shoot well.
That is true.
So I like shooting them.
You just enjoy the challenge, I guess.
Yeah.
You know.
I remember when I got my first competition bolt gun, which my buddy Greg actually is now shooting. It was a 6 Creedmoor FN SPR that I had rebarreled from 308. You know, I transitioned to that from the LMT MWS, which I think at the time had a 20-inch 308 barrel. I go to that FN and 6 Creedmoor, and I'm like, wow, this thing is like unbelievably easier to shoot.
Yeah.
It hit percent probably went, I don't remember, but I feel like it probably went way up. It just, I don't know. I like shooting ARs.
Interesting.
Yeah,
it's very interesting.
I love reading online, you know, about how ARs are inaccurate or semi-autos are inaccurate. They don't hold their own. I don't necessarily believe that.
The shooters are the problem 9 times out of 10.
Yeah, and I've seen that myself.
There was a time where, you know, ARs probably were shit as far as, is it accuracy or precision? I think it's accuracy. I always get those two mixed up. Like, it does not compute in my brain. It never stays with me.
Maybe precision.
What is the correct terminology for the rifle and for the ammo? Like, my favorite thing currently, total side tangent, is, you know, Hornady's big thing is accurate, deadly, dependable.
Yes.
And Brian Lentz is just constantly going, no ammo is accurate. I guess accurate is the correct terminology.
Accurate's like the alignment of your like optic to the right, right. Versus the spread would be the precision. Right.
That's precision awesome. Is the ammo actually is an argument can be had, the rifle or the shooter, whatever. But where the hell was we at? Was somebody the
we're debating platforms? Yes,
yeah, well, he threw you off because he's not a hunter. Bolt guns aren't his favorite. You're just like, who is this man?
I will say bolt guns in the Magnum calibers for sure.
Have you just not had a nice, slick custom action, though, that you're just like, oh, God, that feels so right? And then you go shoot your AR and you get gas in your face and you're like, fuck this piece of shit.
No, I've got some really nice bolt gun actions. I got, you know, two. I guess I've got 3 bolt guns now. 2 of them are.
We need to pump those numbers out.
In my opinion, they're nice. They're very nice. Like, they're nice. Yeah, no, they're very nice actions. But there's just something about an AR. Accurately shooting an AR to me is fun.
I've been through phases, many phases on ARs. Hated them at first, which that, you know, so it's astounding the difference of just a couple hours. Well, it's like six hours east, northeast of here makes in like what you're aware of, which nowadays is a lot different. But when I was kind of coming up, getting into long range shooting, getting into shooting more in general. Yeah, when I was growing up, fucking Walmart's the gun store.
Yep.
But then, like, Bass Pro opened up. Like, opened the world up a little bit more. The internet started to become more. I started becoming more aware of the internet. I mean, let's just face it. Like, video games, I'm like, are these guns out there? Like, movies, paying attention to more movies.
Yeah, you're right.
And then, like, local gun stores.
And then he saw American Sniper with.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, like, the Mark 12, what was that? That was not American Sniper. That was Lone Survivor.
Yeah.
Dude, everybody wanted a Mark 12.
I still want that Mark 12.
Yeah.
From the movie.
Yep.
So, like, the first gun store I went into that had a bunch of different ARs, it was just like, and then I started getting more into predator hunting, moving through different platforms, and I got my first AR. And actually, it was I'm going to get it back. I told the guy I'd build him a new 6 ARC.
That's awesome.
Even though it's by today's standards, it's garbage. But I want that rifle back.
Yep.
It's actually a DPMS Varmint. But it was a 1/8 twist, 16-inch barrel. It would shoot Varmint while it's lights out. So I got like into ARs, and now I'm just like, these are pretty cool.
They're awesome. You know,
moved down here right when I was getting in suppressors. Like, moving down here like kicked it into overdrive because of the availability and everything else. But this is pre. I don't even know if there were flow through suppressors when we first moved down here.
I mean, technically yes, but I mean not
nothing like mainstream.
Yeah.
Get a suppressor, put on an AR. Like there weren't. And I'm just like, I fucking hate this. Like, this is shit.
Oh man,
there's so much gas in my face. Like, I just I hated it. This is also pre, like, developing ammo for suppress semianos and all that kind of shit. This is just, like, developing bolt gun ammo this time. And like, at this time, the adjustable gas blocks were kind of coming on.
Bootleg
adjustable bolt carrier. A couple of adjustable bolt carriers had just come out. And we went through this little phase of, like, tuning them and all kinds of shit. And it was just like, it's still just filthy as fuck. Like, with these, you know, the suppressor of the day at that time was dead air Sandman S's and L's. Sandman S's and L's.
Okay, yeah.
Like, for us, you know, in my world. But it just, like, when you compare it to a bolt gun at this time frame, like, the stuff that's available to me in my world, and the suppressors that are available, I'm just like, well, the fucking boat, I don't have to clean the boat gun every 10 rounds. Like, and it's not throwing a bunch of gas in my face and not, you know, stuff like
it's
that.
It's also so OCD as shit. Yeah. So, he cleans his guns. You don't clean your guns.
Yeah, I don't really do that. So,
so it was just like, it was, you know, after, like, we started playing with tunable gas blocks, and I'm just like, this is shit. I can't like, it's so filthy. It's throwing shit in my face. It's violent.
Oh,
like,
I love
it. I'm just like, no, no. It is harder to shoot them more precise, accurate.
Precise. Well, technically both. I mean, I think that's the thing. Like, you're saying, you really love the sport of trying to shoot AR accurately.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest things you'll notice is everybody who owns an AR, like the typical AR guy, all vastly underestimate the level of precision yes. that AR is yes. capable of.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Like, yes.
It's insane.
Yep.
100%. So there's also, they don't have the concept of shooting non-55 grain, like, import, yes. you know.
Yeah. Also too. True.
So, like, I got out of it. I just put the ARs aside. I'm just like, bolt guns are my life
dumb.
Now.
Yeah.
And, you know, we went vastly down that road to the point to where I was like, this is going to get boring. I think I'm going to start messing with ARs again. Yep. Also, like, munitions fully kicking off, and I started looking at the market as a whole. Like, we got our varmint, custom hand-loaded varmint stuff. We got our Premier long-range stuff. Like, all that's great, and it's going good. Like, it's always going to be great. Let me take a look at the ARs again.
Yep.
So that's when, like, it kicked me back over to ARs again. I wanted to optimize ammo to run better out of ARs. Because, you know, you basically... Well, I was about to say, like, most people go down this route, which I understand that I'm not normal, of wanting to, like, optimize the ammo for the platform, all that shit. Like, I've kind of explored as much as I could at the time for bolt gun ammo. Now I'm just like, I bet I can make this AR run a lot smoother.
100%.
And all that. Like, so I get back into ARs, and then new shit comes out. Like, flow through suppressors become more prevalent.
6R.
6R becomes a thing. Valkyrie really kicked it off for me hard.
That was 2019? Think so? No, 2018 SHOT Show.
Yes. Valkyrie put me back in love with it because super efficient cartridge. Like, that's actually a really good AR-15 round now. Probably not much longer when 22R comes out, but, you know, great round. You know, it just spiraled me back into ARs. And then also, what you've seen in the meantime is AR is becoming vast amounts more popular.
Oh, yeah.
Within the hunting community as well as, like, fucking the whole world.
Yep.
And then you see, like, all this, again, like, cartridge development for AR-15 platforms. All these new manufacturers coming online, like, all these new gas blocks coming online, suppressors optimized for ARs, and, like, all this great shit. And thus, we get to where we are now. Like, ARs are pretty fucking great. I mean, they're you can awesome. Still get a shit bag barrel.
Yep.
That exists. Like, there's, you know, the problem, there's pros and cons having such popularity out of a platform. Pros is there's lots of new development and technology. Well,
oh, man.
At the end of the day, it's still a fucking AR-15. But there's lots of new developments, and I would say probably machining. Like, shit's getting way better because of CNC yep. machining and all 100%. That kind of stuff. You know, as we discussed upstairs, consistency in your platform and your atoms going into the platform. And, like, I mean, just think about it over the past couple of years, all the different bolt carrier groups, different styles, weight savings, non-weight savings, like all this other bullshit, different kinds of buffers and all kind, you know, just so much shit. And then 6R comes on the scene and just fucking stole my heart.
Man, I was late to adopt. I thought it was one of those kind of hype calibers.
Yeah.
it was actually the comments in some of my subscribers and Instagram followers that were like, dude, you got to try Six Arc. And when I did, I was like, oh, that's actually legit.
It so seems like it had been the, like it had been, you'd have been so early on being you like semi-auto platforms.
Like I said, I thought it was hype. I thought it was overpriced. I didn't think the performance would be there.
Naturally, because of the big flop of the Valkyrie. Now, I say that the Valkyrie suffered because someone other than Horty come out with it.
We need to make it. We made it a meme, like a chart. It's like, is this cartridge going to succeed? Is one of these like, is it one of these companies producing it, or is it
I can? I took. I can take you and show you some Valkyries I have that shoot fucking phenomenally amazing. And the ammo we've produced is really good, like especially compared to some of the other shit. The Horny Valkyrie ammo is pretty good, but that's a super, that's a great cartridge. And again, it just did not, it did not get a fair shake. Like they played, you know, they, people accuse Horny of being all about marketing when in reality, like they're also all into shooting and they bring good cartridges to the market. Stuff. Whereas I think Federal probably a little bit more on the marketing side on this particular cartridge. And it didn't get a fair shake. It got some shitty ammo. And like it also played on the fact like that's when a lot of AR people, I'm sure you felt like inundated being you're like old school semi-auto long range shooter.
308.
Like all these new guys that are in ARs, they all of a sudden want to shoot long range. And the Valkyrie's like, you could do it 1,000 yards. And then all of a sudden it's a huge flop.
You'd be surprised what you could do with a 77 grain. You know, some nice 5.56.
Yeah, pretty. I always go back to 223 because it's relatively inexpensive to train with.
Yes.
You know, that's just the reality of the situation. Now, it is.
You said it.
I know. I say that's the reality of the situation. I have, like, words I go through. I have phases.
until the followers point it out.
Yes, until it's, yeah. Like. It's driven in my head. Stop saying this much. And right now I'm on. That's really the situation. Anyways, side tangent. You know, I'm just going to say this. If you like the 77 grain out of 223, you should try the 77 grain out of 224 Valkyrie.
But fair point. Very fair point.
Or not. Just wait for the 22 arc.
Yeah. At this point, I would say don't get into. I actually was going to send you a barrel if you'd tell me if you was interested. I have an extra barrel. But right now it's like, why? It's gonna like it's
yeah.
It's,
where's it going?
The arc's gonna kill it down. Like, let's be honest. I don't, you know, due to the cost of the round, obviously the 223/556 not go anywhere, and you can get a lot done with the 77 grain. Especially if you're hand loading.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're hand loading for a bolt gun, that's where it gets super interesting. 223. Like, there's people that, especially 223 AI, which I was always curious why no one that. I know a couple of varmint hunters. Like, I know old school varmint hunters, like real varmint hunters, like prairie dog shooters. That's their varmints.
Oh, for sure.
And that's where I learned a lot in the very beginning about long range shooting that spiraled me into getting into long range shooting was prairie dog shooters.
Yep.
Because they were like, they're really local people I knew that were kind of into it, like the shooting further ranges.
Yep.
But. Like, they got into, like, the 223 AI, and then I know a couple of them that did some ARs. Now, fitting was a little bit finicky, but fantastic results out of 223 AI, you know, especially with the 77 grain, something yep. You can stomp on a little bit more. I know a couple of guys that made them in semi-auto platforms, but it's primarily, like, a bolt gun game. I mean, where to next?
I tell you, I
feel like I'm rambling on about shit too much.
I have a question for you. So, you know, you said the, which video was it? The 6.5, the Creedmoor versus SCAR 20S. That was like your first, like, this video blows up. And
yeah, and like, folks like this, yeah.
And it seems like, you know, you put out a couple other ones, the 300 PRC versus the 338, really.
Yeah, that was a solid one.
Doing some numbers. And then, it seems like a little bit later, you put out the MRAD versus the Ruger Precision, which expensive shit versus cheap shit always. That's really, really good formula. How was it like? That really blew up. Like, what was that like?
Oh, that was awesome. That video, I remember I actually had trouble making that video. So I can't remember the full timeline now, but there was, I can't remember if my work schedule or my timing throughout the day, but I filmed part of that video on one day, and then it took me like a week or 10 days or something to get back and film the rest of that video. And the whole time, yeah, you can see in that one. So the the beginning of the video, there's some green in the field there, and then I'm in the dead part of the field there. So there's a little bit of a time lapse there where this, and the whole time this time lapse is happening, I'm like, I have to get this video finished. I know this is going to be a banger. Like the Ruger Precision Rifle, everybody talks about Ruger Precision Rifles, and then the MRAD with the Mark 22 contract, I knew it would have some, you know, some following and some interest. I knew when I could get that video put together, it was going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. And I remember when it launched, it actually was a very slow launch. So obviously I was I'm not a big channel now, but I was a very small channel then.
Right.
So I didn't have, at the time, I don't think I even had 1,000 subscribers, if I remember correctly. And it was a very slow launch. And I was like, oh man, it didn't.
I'm a loser.
It didn't really do what I wanted. Yeah. You know, I thought this was going to be a banger. Yeah. And I can't remember maybe 2 or 3 months later, I started watching my YouTube stats and that video was taking off. That video was getting like 5,000 views a day when my channel had not that many views.
Right.
And I was loving it. I was getting 5,000 views a day. I was getting probably 100 subscribers per day. And I was getting super energized, you know.
It makes you want to get out there and make more content.
Yeah, and I realized in that video, people love the comparisons. Yes. They love the expensive versus the cheap.
Yes.
And I felt like they enjoy seeing the relevant high-searched, you know, it's kind of a no-brainer, but the relevant high-searched things. So that one, it was kind of emotions where really hard, I was really frustrated with myself getting it put together. It launches and it was kind of a slow launch. And I'm like, well, that was kind of a fail. And then boom, it took off.
What is it at right now, Fitz?
It's a 281. Yeah, 281.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's probably my most viewed video now, I'm guessing. And that one's funny to me because that was before I had a little microphone set up. It was before I had the through the scope cam. I mean, that is just two iPhones and me out there trying to film. Right. I had a GoPro on the camera, I think, if I remember right. But yeah, that video, it was very energizing.
Right.
Yeah, it's very energizing.
So I haven't gone back and watched all your old videos. So I might should have done this for this podcast. Have you always maintained that more teaching thing, or have you like swamped as you went on to, I mean, obviously right now, like this is what I tell people all the time. Like if we had time to do a proper long range shooting YouTube channel, your channel's it. So why even try? Like you do exactly how I wished I had time to do things. Basically like not just like, oh, here's so-and-so gun that someone gave me for free. No, here's the actual product in use. This is what I'm doing today. And I'm going to explain to you within good detail. This is how I'm going to do this, or this is what I'm doing, and this is why this is happening, and stuff like that. So have you always maintained that level, or is this something like you notice people are picking up on, so you just kind of lean into it? Like, is it in your nature? Are you uncomfortable teaching? Like,
oh, no.
Tell me more.
So I would say initially, I didn't even really have a plan for the channel. I was just going to make videos because kind of weird. I wanted to have a YouTube channel. So like once I started to see some interest in the channel, I'm like, I want to try this and see if I can grow this into a channel. Mm-hmm. And my several of my buddies were very encouraging, like, dude, you got this. The videos are good. And at that time, early on, I just was trying to put out content that people would watch to get some growth. And as the channel started to grow, then I realized through the comments and messages that I was getting on Instagram, that people were appreciating my delivery style.
Yes.
And they were appreciating the messages that I had in the video. So then I transitioned to, I want to put out content, obviously, for the channel, but I also want entertainment in every video and then provide the viewer some level of value.
Right.
So I'm hoping in every one of my videos, there's some level of value to the viewer.
Right.
So, you know, you watch a 30-minute video of mine. I hope at the end you come away with
something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of channels out there that are just entertainment, and they're, here's a, you know, and that, in my mind, that market's already very filled.
Yes.
I've been watching YouTube a long time. It's where I learned to shoot long range. It's where I learned a lot of the things that I use in my videos. And in my mind, that's like old school shooting YouTube. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm after with the channel.
Have you watched all 187,000 videos from Rex? I would have thought, what's his channel called? Tibisaurus Rex or some shit like that?
Which guy? You have me blanking.
The original OG YouTube long range god, Rex. Nowadays he's kind of out there. Like I still enjoy his scope comparison and stuff like that.
Do I not even know about this guy?
What? I thought everybody knew about him.
He goes down some OG, weird YouTube. Son.
Yeah, I don't.
He's OG. He had like a I want to say it's like 180 something video series on long range shooting.
Holy cow.
You've seen this guy at some point on YouTube.
No, I recognize the guy.
A massive video blow up where he shoots a beer can at 1,200 yards.
No, I definitely recognize him.
His wife is like, oh my God, you got it. But I swear to God, I don't know if it's still there.
Yeah, from 11 years ago.
How many parts are in it?
Well, this is just the beer can video. 4 minutes, 1.5 million.
Oh, he had a long range.
Epic sniper shot with a 338.
This was the first guy I ever saw shooting long range on YouTube. And he had, it was like 180 something video series on long range shooting. And he was like the first guy I remember seeing on YouTube. I'm like, this guy knows the shit, which he is an incredibly intelligent person. I don't know what the fuck he does for a living, other than like teaching people how to shoot long range. But like back in the day when there was
nothing. This is my guy, Ultimate Music Playlist, pre-training videos. Then it gets Nuclear War Prophecy.
He is kind of, nowadays,
the law of God.
He's definitely like, when his older age, he's definitely kind of went out to some weird areas. Like he's almost like a, I don't know, like a doomsday prepper nearly like nowadays. But back in the day, this somebody was talking about shit no one else even knew about. Like,
yeah, no, I definitely recognize
olden
his face.
Days. I just assumed you had seen all the videos.
No, you know, the other thing.
I watched all of them.
The other thing on my channel, you know, you watch a lot of these, and I haven't watched all of his videos, but you watch a lot of these like instructional type videos that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a very simple mind and a very short attention span, which is surprising for me making 30-minute videos.
But, it doesn't really add up.
I've attended some long range shooting classes from different instructors and stuff. And a lot of times it seems like in this space, there's a lot of knowledge there. And sometimes people have a hard time breaking that knowledge down for a student. And I've been on the receiving end of that. And given I have a very simple mind, when I have these concepts figured out, I want to try to explain it to other people in a very simple way.
Yes.
You know, and there's a lot of stuff out there that's just like noise in a lot of this stuff. And I try to just get rid of that, you know. Cold bore, you know, cold bore shot or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it's probably a thing, but I'm going to fire 100 rounds today, so I really don't care.
Right.
You know, like, I want to take the noise out of it and try to make it simple and digestible for my viewers.
Right.
Now, in something you're doing, cold bore shot, that probably matters. So you should be, you know, understand, is that cold bore shot or is that cold bore shooter?
Right.
To me, I think it's cold bore shooter. But for like just a general target shooter, I want to break this stuff down and make it digestible for the normal person that's just out to have like fun at the weekend or they want to go out and compete at their first match. So,
how many people that ingest your YouTube channel do you feel actually shoot the rifles?
Oh, that's a good question. So I think a lot of them shoot the rifles, but judging by the comments and the conversations I have with many of the people,
I'll spit out my drink.
I don't think there's a lot that have the opportunity to shoot more than a couple hundred yards.
Right. Do you religiously read all the comments, and how do you feel about the hate?
I love both.
Everybody gets hate.
I love both. So I love the comments, and the hate to me, depending on what it is, like you're not going to offend me. I will not.
I don't know you.
Yeah, like
just a fucking person.
Cool.
It's
opinion.
Probably like trying to get. You know, you're not actually. This is the way I treat hate comments. One, I laugh out loud.
Yeah,
it's quite hilarious. Two, I read it with a grain of salt. Like a lot of times it'll be like, you're saying the same shit over and over. Sorry, I'll work on that.
Yeah. You know,
sometimes there is some truth to it, but sometimes you need to understand as a content creator that people are there just to piss you the fuck off. Like they're not actually,
I love it.
They're not actually like trying to bring in kind of value. They're just literally like, they're just shitting on stuff. Like that's
what
they're
doing. Do you farm hate? Sometimes.
What's that?
Do you farm hate? Do you drop little seeds out there?
Intentionally, but it's going to happen. Like I had a comment that I was telling these guys earlier, the strangest comment. So on one of my videos, I think it was the 308 barrel compare video. I got a comment that said, I forgot what it said. It was something about like, oh, congrats on loving the ATF or something. And I'm like,
oh, I love those.
I was like,
okay. Not today, ATF. Like,
yeah, I'm like, okay, cool. Thanks. Yeah. So I do enjoy the comments. I do try to read as many comments as I can. The hate, it is what it is.
How often do you read comments where you literally answered the question in the video?
Many times. So my favorite one, I screenshot a lot of these and send to my buddies. The number one of those is, what ballistic app do I use?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I see that a lot.
In every one of my videos, I make it clear that I use the Shooter Ballistic app.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that comment so many times.
Yes.
So I think I'm going to make a video on that. Here's the app that I use.
Yeah. Why do you use that app? Have you tried many others? Is that just the one you like, or you just start using it? That's what you use.
That's the one. I started using that. You know, somebody will probably fact check us. I'm thinking roughly 10 years ago. I've had good luck with it through the years. I've learned to use it.
And what is it called? Shooter Ballistic?
It's Shooter Ballistic.
Shooter Ballistic
Calculator.
Calculator. I don't even know if I have this one or have used this one.
It's by the Kennedy Development Group.
I've used a lot of them.
Yeah, it's provided good results for me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I use. Most recently, I have tried SIG has one that paired with some rangefinders. I've used that a little bit. And then I've got a lot of comments around trying the Hornady, but I haven't done that yet.
Back in the day when Hornady first came out with their app, I used it a lot. And that fucking thing crashed constantly. Like, it was a tragedy. I really like what they're trying to do with, like, the integration of the app and the reloading manuals and all that stuff. But I still, to this day, I don't know if it's a phone thing, if it's me thing. I have trouble with it. Probably, yes. But back in the day when it first came out, that bitch crashed, like, all the time. Now, there's a lot of people that love the Hornady app. There's a lot of people that love the Hornady Ford-Off Kestrel.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when we ordered Kestrels last for the store, that one sold out first. Isn't it the Hornady Ford? Oh. Yes, Hornady Ford sold out first. There is, like, if you listen to their podcast about four degrees of freedom or whatever they call it, when they explain how their app works and all that stuff, it makes a lot of sense. The Ford-Off situation makes a lot of sense. Essentially, as it pertains to, like, Applied Ballistics, their thing is custom curves, custom drag models, custom curves. It's basically kind of the same thing that Ford-Off is doing. It's just different, getting to the solution differently. And, like, for me, it comes down to your intent. Like, how far are you shooting?
Yep.
Shooting 600 yards, use whatever fucking ballistics app you want. Like, it's pretty, and people get upset when I say shit like this. It's pretty fucking easy to shoot 600 yards.
Very easy.
And despite today's equipment, modern optics, modern cartridges, may not be easy with 308. Like all the modern advances of equipment, it's very easy to get to 600 yards. It's very easy to get a true enough like solution for the shooter who's shooting it. Like,
man, you could probably literally Google.
Yes. Yeah.
You could get a drop and it would be decently close.
Yeah, it'd get you close enough to where you can collect your own dope and data and fix it.
Yep.
Now, when you start pushing said projectile out beyond, I'm going to say most modern cartridges, out beyond 1,000 yards, that's when you really better have a pretty good app and you better have your shit pretty squared away.
And that's where I learned to use the Shooter app.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
of all the apps I've used, I don't think I've ever used Shooter app. I'm a Kestrel. Strelok, is that how you pronounce it? Strelok. Strelok. Pro, like the one you pay for.
Yep.
I'm a huge fan of that. It's same thing. Like, I have grillions of them. I also use I use a lot of, for the binos and the Easy Six optics, I use the 6 hour stuff, which that's a very, this is what people need to understand. Going back to like 600 to 800 yards type thing, it takes a pretty simplistic ballistic solver to get to those ranges.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of doesn't matter. From a hunting standpoint, what were you about to say?
I was going to say, I have a question. What do you consider, because this is different.
Oh, yeah.
What do you consider to be long range? Where does it start for you?
That's a good question. So earlier life, Zach, when I was living in Georgia and shooting on the East Coast, man, for me, long range, I would have said 300 yards plus. Mm-hmm. That was early in my long range career. Now that I'm out west and I've got access to much further distances, I would say 800 to 1,000 plus.
I concur with that statement.
Yeah. I always try to base it on, it seems like there's a certain mindset that could work out to, you know, 500-600, where you don't really have to know anything concrete, that completely falls apart past like 600-700.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm thinking in my mind, like, my expectations for hit percent, you know, and inside of 1,000. So I like to shoot, on my channel, I call it like practical rifles. So I'm shooting more generous type targets.
Mm-hmm.
Inside of 1,000, I'm looking for pretty high hit percent.
Yeah.
You know, when you get beyond 1,000, that's where, to me, it becomes more challenging. That's where the long range starts. That's where I'm a lower hit percent I would accept. That's kind of how I would just define that number.
I think it's accurate and fair.
Yeah, yeah. Because I know, like, I think what the NRA technical definition is, like, 500, right, something like that. But, yeah, everybody who talks long range, they're almost, like, talking different languages, yeah, it seems, a lot of the time.
What caliber are you shooting?
I think, like, you know, when I answer that question, that's it with a target shooting mindset. A hunting, yeah, mindset might be very different.
Oh, that's a... Jesus Christ.
That's a landmine.
Yes, that's...
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh.
To some people, if you're, like, shooting past, like, 200 yards at a deer feeder, at something it's eating, unethical. You're basically, like,
you're the devil.
Spiting God.
Gotcha. Yes. You're not a real hunter. It comes with its whole thing, but...
Gotcha.
Wherever I was at on Ballistics, like, I don't remember where I was going. Basically, like, I run 6-hour... Kilo 6K binos, mm-hmm, 8X ones. But the cool thing about that, so I have the newest Easy 6 scopes, which is like a mixture between their, you know, the BDX system and a long range capable scope. Like if you're not using the BDX system, it is actually very capable optic. Nice. Like it has a much better reticle than like the early versions of the BDX system. And with those kilo 6K binoculars, I can... So BDX maxes out 800 yards.
Yep.
Which, for a hunting standpoint, that's totally fine. And it's a holdover system within the optic. I don't know if you're familiar with BDX scopes. So, mm-hmm, what you can do is take I think it's mostly Garmin product that will sync in with those binoculars, which is most Garmin applied ballistics products.
Cool.
So I could take that rangefinder, sync it in with the, I don't have it with me right now. It's over there on the charger, hopefully. Garmin Delta Tactics Pro, is that what the one I have? That has applied ballistics. I can actually sync the binoculars with, wow, the watch. And then, so after, like say if I'm running a BDX system hunting scope, the Easy 6 that I can dial or hold over much further ranges, like if I max out at hunting ranges, 800 yards, the BDX system, I just sync it in with the watch, turn the scope off, and then sync it in with the watch, and I can get solutions well beyond.
No way.
Basically at the whatever the maximum distance. I don't remember. I've tested all this shit in nauseam, but whatever the maximum distance for those binoculars, it'll give me a solution within the watch because it's applied ballistics inside the watch.
Wow.
So this is really cool. Like, I really like those systems. I really like the quickness of the systems when you put those ballistics profiles within those and, like, from a hunting standpoint, that's a pretty good system. Which is like that allow me to go practice out to 1,000, but hunt much closer, yep, ranges. But I also know that if for whatever reason I let my battery go dead on my BDX scope, I can just sync the watch to, yeah, it. I have a backup. So I like that. Obviously, I love the Impact 4000.
I was just thinking it. The other one I've been playing with, man, the Impact 4000. That's what's up.
I really like that thing. I'm really excited to see where they go with it. Like, yep, how small can we get this bitch? But also on top of that, if you like the Impact 4000, like the feature set and the ballistics solver and everything else is the same as the Razor 4000 GB rangefinder.
Yep.
You can put your ballistic. Well, it's actually the same app. You build your profile. You can actually say you're swapping from the rangefinder to the Impact. Yep. You can actually just drag that profile to the rangefinder, the handheld. Legit. And then your profile is already ready. And it's here's the only difference. The rangefinder is the same ballistics profile and everything else. You can use the app the same way where you mark locations and build target cards, all that shit. Here's the difference. On the handheld rangefinder, I aim into the wind and hit wind bearing capture mode.
Okay.
And it remembers that position. So from a hunting or match shooting standpoint, it remembers, because it has a compass, it remembers what direction you were.
That's cool.
And it doesn't matter where you move, the wind's captured until you move it. Or you can also turn it off and just, from a hunting standpoint, I play things a lot different, which the Vortex products, because they had the Fury 5000 ABs that had the same wind bearing capture mode, yep, that kind of changed how I do things. But normally I bracket, well, I don't know if it's like the correct phrase bracketing wind, which I'm just going to get. I'll lead into my question for you is about wind.
World's longest question.
Yes. So, what I tend to do is I'll take a wind. I'll carry around a Kestrel, but that's – I don't – the fucking people that take the time to do ballistics on Kestrel, I don't know what you got. Like, you have plenty of time for things. But anyways, I'll capture a wind speed, and I kind of go from there. But also, I'm reading Mirage and all that stuff. Yes. But I'll capture wind speed. I'll get a direction. And what I do with my range finders is I'll go ahead and program a wind speed in at a direct left or right, yep, wind.
Yep. Yep.
So I know, like, okay, I'm a full left, right wind, send it. If I know I'm a quarter, I'm going to reduce it back. Like, yep. You know, I kind of simplify it from a hunting standpoint, and then I hold off. Say, I know looking at mirage, I can't read wind directly on. So I'm going to favor whatever side is appropriate to make the long-range hunting shot, if that makes sense, without drawing it out on a goddamn diagram.
Yep.
Basically, like, okay, it's calling for 1 mil, and I'm going to aim for the shoulder. Like, normal circumstances, let's say I'm calling the wind perfectly, everything's good to go, I'm going to hold 1 mil on the shoulder, and I'm going to hit right there on the shoulder. But if I know if I think there's a chance I might be slightly off of my wind, if the wind's coming from my left blowing to the right, I'm going to hold a slight amount more to the left because I know I'll still hit that front shoulder. It just be might be a little bit forward of the front shoulder, might be a little bit back of the front shoulder, but it's going to dispatch the animal humanely. Is that how you, if I explain this properly, it's hard to explain without like drawing it out or showing you on a reticle. Is that how you treat, okay, so in a wind situation when you're shooting long range, say you got an Ipsic target at 1,000 yards, we could take a wind measurement here at the shooter. Yeah, contingent upon the fact we're not shooting over a great ravine or anything like that, it's just flat ground. If you're reading mirage at the target and you're kind of thinking, well, it seems like it's slightly different than it is here, do you kind of treat the wind such as that? Like, will you give it like a fudge left or fudge right type situation so it'll drift in the, still drift in the kill zone, but I might be an inch or two off?
Yes. So margin of error.
Mm-hmm.
I would say yes. The gotcha. Wind. I was afraid you were going to ask me how I read wind and how I... So that... So I would say yes. If I'm shooting like an Ipsic-sized target, definitely there is a margin of error there. I like... Mm-hmm. Those are pretty generous targets.
Right.
I very much... I try to read mirage as best I can. You know, like I've been shooting long range quite a while and still don't have it figured out.
Right.
I read it well enough to understand like which way is the wind moving.
Yes.
And then typically I will compare that again because I'm in a target shooting environment.
Right.
Typically I'll compare like that mirage reading with what I'm feeling at myself versus what I've shot with that rifle or that round previously.
Right.
And then come up with some number to start with.
Right.
If that makes sense. So like if I, you know, if I remember I was out in similar conditions as this and I was shooting like with a 308, 3 mils to the left.
That's at 200 yards, 5 miles.
Shoot. No, you know, so I try to compare what I remember previously against what I'm seeing.
Right.
And, you know, there's probably no perfect science.
There's not.
That I have nailed down. And then I send that round out there and I look for splash. And, you know, if we didn't connect, then we'll try to connect again on the next round. Where I struggle is like when wind is changing while I'm shooting, especially like if I'm shooting a match and you're on the clock. And if there's some wind changes going, it's kind of weird. It's something I need to work on. But basically, when I start shooting, then I'm only looking for splash.
Right.
So I spend time before I send my first shot looking at the wind and thinking and comparing to my app.
Mm-hmm.
But when that first round goes, then I just look for splash. And
yeah, I mean, that's the best thing to do.
Yeah.
Now, where I see new shooters mess up is they won't take, I don't know if you'd say novice shooter, but I see a lot of misdiagnosed problems blamed on elevation, velocity, and wind. Now,
yes.
When you say you do that, that's the same thing I do. Like, especially, you know, you're not going to, it's hard to go out in the field, whether you're target shooting or hunting. Sometimes, I would argue that sometimes, well, contests would be pretty similar to hunting sometimes because the glorious thing about long range hunting is you do, it allows you to have a little bit more time to react to situations or watch the animal or.
Yep.
You know, guess and judge the animal and everything else, but it doesn't always happen like that because animals tend to just be moving and feeding when they're uninterrupted. They're not typically not going to be sitting still, so there is a little bit of a time frame thing. It's kind of like competition shooting, but if I send a round down range based off of what I've seen, like very rapidly looked at the mirage, and I've already taken wind readings throughout the day, kind of when I stopped, and I kind of have a general idea of the velocity of the wind. I say general very lightly because, like, you know as well as I do. Well, I don't know how much time. Have you spent much time shooting over canyons?
I wouldn't say large canyons, but where I shoot out west is, like, pretty rolling hills.
I bet you get,
It'll do some weird stuff.
Yes. Yeah. You're very aware of what can happen. So the best thing you could do at that point, like you can only sit there and try to read the wind as much, you know, for so long.
Yep.
The best thing you can do is get better, get even better at being properly on the rifle in faster follow-up shots.
Yes.
Because everybody likes to pretend they're goddamn snappers, even snappers. Everybody's perception of long-range shooting is like first-round impacts.
No. That's accuracy not, by volume.
Yes. That's just not the reality. Because reading wind is the equalizer of all fucking men. Like, is it like, I'm sure Emil, is it Emil or Emeril? I don't, the wind reading god who works for Capstone. Emil.
Oh.
I definitely can't pronounce it. Like, he is like the guy I go to on reading wind. Actually, I'd recommend listening to any podcast he's been on when it pertains to reading wind, like how he reads wind and how he brackets wind, all that shit.
Emil Praslik?
There you go.
Nice.
From Berger.
So even him doesn't call the wind correct all the time. Man. And this guy is the wind reading god.
Yeah.
So knowing how to handle your platform, having a good shooting position built to where you can quickly send another one downrange, especially from a hunting scenario, especially from a long range hunting scenario, god, I would much rather miss and know my wind hold to follow up shot than make such a bad call that I completely wound the animal, which also, that's going to happen. That's going to happen at 100 yards. It's going to happen to 1,000 yards, yep. No matter what the case may be. That fast follow-up shot and knowing how to read the information that was just given to you with that first shot is imperative in long-range shooting, long-range hunting, whatever the case may be.
That's like the number one thing. You know, if I think about like the number one way to improve long-range shooting, you've got to be able to spot your miss.
Mm-hmm.
You have got to be able to spot. And sometimes it's very tough if you're shooting into like vegetation. That can be almost impossible. But you need to be able to give yourself the best chance of that.
Right. So as far as reading wind, what kind of tips can you give us?
Man, that's a good question.
He said shoot faster. shoot a semi-auto.
That's why I love ARs, man. That follow-up shot, here it comes.
So Magpul D60.
Shoot a 308. You can literally watch the bullet drift.
Yeah, with a D60, I've got 60 chances to read the wind. But yeah, and as far as tips, man, like again, as I mentioned on my channel, I keep things very simple.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have any kind of like great formula for you to go out here and read wind. Myself, again, this is kind of weird, but I base my decision more on what I feel at the shooter than what I see downrange, because I trust what I, like, you can read the speed at yourself. You can clearly get the direction at yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I trust that number more than what I see downrange.
Right. Okay, I mean, as it pertains, so in my opinion, you can only make a few, I don't give a fuck who you are, you can only make a few assumptions based off mirage.
Yes.
One being direction.
Yes.
You know, although I've seen it be kind of tricky sometimes, like especially when you're shooting, when you go to shoot, canyons are MF-er, and especially on places like on some of my earlier comps talk where it's all rock. And during the winter out there,
good luck.
Cold in the morning and it warms up and it's literally mirage fucking city.
Yep.
So what you end up with, especially in canyons, it's all these different direction winds. And you're literally looking through it like, my fucking eyes are crossing. Like basically, the only thing you can do at that point is work that parallax.
Mm-hmm.
Come in, out, and try to discern some sort of seeable pattern within the wind. Like I always tell people, like, this is my favorite thing to tell people. If it's going 40,000 different directions, just shoot straight at target.
Yes.
You know, I don't know what else to tell you.
That's what we did today.
I don't even remember where the fuck I was going.
I think you were asking about tips for reading wind.
Oh, yes.
So obviously reading wind is important, and mm-hmm. having an idea of direction speed is important. But something I've learned through the years is maybe more important or equally as important is making sure your rifle is vertical every time you shoot.
Right.
So don't cant your rifle,
mm-hmm.
that especially as you get out to distance.
We'll get into that in a minute.
Okay.
I remember where I was going. Like, there's only a couple things that you can discern from mirage. And, you know, a lot of these guys who put on these schools and classes and everything else, they like to pretend like the mirage is it. While it is direction, it's very rarely in a real-world application you get the same mirage across the same line of sight. Like, there's typically, unless the wind's like streamlined one direction, I've set up in the perfect spot. I know I've got a straight 20-mile-an-hour wind. Like, you're going to get a pretty reliable mirage. But the minute you start adding in canyons and everything else, like, you could have all kinds of crazy shit happening. Yep. And again, you can work the parallax and get different. This requires lots more time and focus to see, like, the different ranges of mirage. And you can kind of, I guess, chart it out and all kinds of shit. Like I said, I normally just, like, is there an overwhelming mirage direction? Okay, that's the direction I'm going to hold into.
That's me.
Is the mirage, okay, for me, there's a couple. Is the mirage so happening so fast? Is it like a streamline? Okay, yeah. That's pretty fast wind.
That's me. I'm going to put in a 12-mile-an-hour for that one.
Is the mirage big waves? Okay, yeah. That's a little bit slower wind. Is the mirage like barely floating? Like, that's a slow wind.
Nope. Yeah, man. I mean,
you can spend a lot of time working on mirage, but the reality of the situation is just know what figure out a direction it's traveling. Yep. And if all else fails, hold dead on. Like, that's, you know, if you can't figure out no discernible direction mirage is floating, my advice is always hold dead on. Like, yep. Obviously dial in your elevation, but hold dead on.
But every round you send is an opportunity to learn.
Yes.
For the next one.
Yes.
So, like, if you saw the mirage doing whatever you saw it doing, mm-hmm. and you send that round and it goes over here, then you know, okay, this equals that.
Right, exactly.
So maybe in the future, you can compare that note to your...
Do you ever dial for wind in any circumstance whatsoever? Me neither. That's kind of gay.
Yeah, no. I don't even think I ever used to, actually.
I couldn't get behind any of my rifles and be sitting behind it and reach up and grab that wind turret and know if I pull it this way, it's going to go this way. Like, that doesn't... When I zero rifles, I do the, you know, I could do it three shots really easy, but I never pay attention, which I just know it's just like in my brain, if I pull this way, it's going to go, I'm going to chase the bullet impact. But as far as like the guys, like when I shot that 22, whatever the shit it was, I had to dial in wind and I'm just like, I don't know what I'm doing as far as dialing wind. I don't, I'm like, wait, it says L and right. I had to dial and hold. Like, that's how it was. 25-mile-an-hour wind, shoot at 2,200 something yards.
I was in an event earlier this year. The scopes we were running didn't have enough windage in the reticle for what we needed, so we had to dial and then.
I dialed and held for those shots, so, but
yeah,
like I said, I don't. You know, I just don't get down like that. Like, it's just, like I said, I couldn't tell you if I looked at a turret and it says L and R. I don't know how that translates into the fucking scope. I just know
less
when I'm buying
wind.
It.
Yeah, really fast wind.
Yeah, really less wind and really fast wind.
I have a question that's going to back things up slightly, but you know, I'm curious. You had that, you know, you carry your ETH as a practical rifle. A contentious issue is like relying on technology for long range shooting. Some people think it makes you like less of a, I guess, practical shooter versus, you know, leveraging the technology to your advantage. What are your thoughts on, you know, all these extra whiz-bang doodads that make it easier? Do you think it...
I'm a fan. I think they're fun. But I think you should definitely understand the concept that's behind it.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, you use that Vortex Impact 4000 and you range that target and it gives you a number. You definitely should understand the concept of what just happened.
Right. Yeah.
I think use the tools for sure.
Yeah.
And then practice, you know, what if the battery goes dead? Then what do you do? So,
right.
I think that requires understanding of the concept.
Yes. I agree with that. You know, I'm all about, I love the new technology. It's especially, this is the biggest thing I get with in the hunting arena, is a lot of guys don't want to put in the time to understand what's happening or why they're getting this number, what this number even means. Like, I know several people that I've actually put ammo together for, rifles together for, optics packages. They literally just know. When I range, it tells me in range finder to go to 4, and it tells me to hold this wind, and that's what they do.
Yeah.
They have zero concept of anything, which they typically only hunt 400 or 500 yards. So I'm just kind of like, I guess it's okay. But what if this technology goes down? Do you what know you, how to?
What if you leave it at home?
Yeah. Do you know how to, like?
Well, my favorite one would be like a laser range finder. So you're this happened to me. No, my video, the range finder wouldn't hit my target. So I had to mill with my scope.
Right.
And I remember that pulled some comments.
I don't even know where my MilDotMaster is.
Yeah, no. So the shooter app actually will do it for you. So I use the technology for it.
Oh, cheater.
But years
that's
ago,
that's not real sniping.
Yeah. I learned the formula. I couldn't remember it. But rangefinder wouldn't hit the target. So I was like, man, I'm going to mill this out. And it's in one of my videos. And that got a lot of comments. Don't think I did it right. It was closer than just guessing.
Right. Yeah.
So,
I mean,
like 2,100 yards or something. I'm trying to mill a 30-inch plate.
Yeah.
You know, so you get that far out, you got to be pretty spot on for.
It would definitely help.
Yeah, right?
So as far as caliber, did I already ask you this?
Yeah. No. This will be fun.
What is your favorite long range? No, let me just stop. What is your favorite? Okay.
Yeah, objection, leading the witness. He's long range in the name.
I can already tell this is going
to
be funny.
I'm going to send you out to the 1,000-yard berm. Keep in mind, we run varmint real life size silhouette targets. So they're. Your.
The geometry is inconsistent. There's not.
Yeah.
Okay.
So your kill zone's a fair amount smaller than like an Ipsic size target.
Yep.
1,000 yards. What rifle are you taking?
Man,
What rifle and caliber?
That's a great question.
And let me just put more preference on. You get a $10,000 if you hit it on the first shot. You owe me $1,000 if you hit it on the second shot.
I would probably, man, this question is very leading. But yeah, in this scenario, I probably would take my MRAD and like 300 PRC.
Fair enough. That's exactly what I'd do. Let me take the fucking surface there missile.
Yeah, I mean, you think about that rifle, it's 7 mils to 1,000 yards.
I say that. Here's my caveat. I'm either, there's 1,000 yards. I'm going to change my answer and I'm going to go with the 22 Creed.
Okay.
Just because like. Oh, I mean, you're taking.
That's a good one.
You're taking a, especially like when you step into the 88s. I haven't even dove into the 90s yet. I got all the 90s ready to go. I just had not had time. Like, that's a playtime project and mm-hmm. I didn't have time for it. But like with that, even the 75s, like I'd walk out there and wouldn't have any issues like taking that shot in any kind of wind scenario. But especially when you start talking about 80s and 88s. Phenomenal performer at long range because you're screeching out that velocity on a relatively high BC projectile.
I guess I don't actually own a 6 Creedmoor anymore.
I'm probably taking 22 degrees. I'm that much more confident in it.
Yeah. The confidence is key. Take whatever you're the most confident in.
But I definitely. 100%. Like, obviously, like the 300 PRC would be a wise choice. The new 7 PRC with 180 would be another completely wise choice. So. Those calibers are, these newfangled cartridges are great because going back to your, you know, I'm sure you say the same thing I do. Like, technology is great and everything else. The barrier to entry is much easier to get into long range shooting nowadays. But the equalizer of all men is wind rating as it pertains to like first round impacts. But the glorious thing about Hornady, praise Hornady, coming out with these newfangled I guess you could say hot rod when you compare it to like 308, but these new fangled cartridges that have super high BC projectiles going somewhere close to 3,000, like 27, 28, 29, 3,000, depending on the projectile, BC, and everything else. Your ability to not be 100% correct on wind calls is far greater when you're running these super high BC projectiles. I'm assuming that's why you're choosing that particular cartridge.
Yep. No, that 300 PRC, man, like flat shooting. Like I want to say it's about 7 mils to 1,000, 7.2.
Mm-hmm.
So very flat, very short time of flight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your windage error there is almost nothing.
Right, yeah.
So that's where I would be the most confident taking that shot. That's
interesting.
A lot of rifle and a lot of caliber.
It is.
But that's where my confidence would be.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
I think about the times I've shot out to 1,000 yards and first round hits are, for me, quite rare. It's you know, it's pretty rare to hit with the first round every time. But definitely the 300 PRC, that rifle is a shooter.
Right. So, Where do we go?
I have one. Let's see. So the official stance of the TPH podcast is we're haters of the 308 cartridge, obviously.
Yeah, so I had a follow up here.
I was going to say, I feel like you're a 308 guy.
Oh, dude.
Because you cut your teeth on it. So
had you asked me what is my favorite what's my favorite caliber to shoot?
I was getting to that.
308.
Oh my God. Why?
No, 308. No, I want to give you the floor to defend 308's honor in the Lion's Den.
Man, it's just, I don't know, it's just kind of old school cool, you know? It's my opinion, it is a very capable caliber out to 1,000 yards for the kind of shooting that I like to do. I think it's fun. Is it the best? No. But is it fun? I can go to the store. I can buy a box of 308 for $20.
I just want to point out something, guys.
Okay.
He shoots a semi-automatic a lot because he enjoys a good challenge.
Yeah.
The same can be said for running a 308 at long range.
That's actually part of it. You know, it's affordable to shoot. There's a ton of rifles available in it. It'll get out there to 1,000 yards. It's going to help you. It's going to help you. Dude, 2,500 feet per second. Come on. She'll get out there. But it's going to help you with the wind calling. You know, it's going to magnify all the advantages of the nicer calibers. You don't have that with a 308. So you're going to learn really quick. You know, I do have to hold wind at 300 yards. That's crazy.
Yes. Yeah.
Versus a 6.5 or, you know, a fast six, whatever. You're like, well, left edge of plate.
This is one of the, like, we had this big thing. How long was that? Like last year when the guy was really coming at us on 308.
I love 308.
The PRS shooter. You remember that shit?
Oh,
we did something about recoil, and I like just shit all over 308 about the recoil and everything else.
Recoil and suppressors.
It started out something else, and then it quickly molded into like,
I remember
we got into 308 long range territory, and then it became this whole thing because this guy was going back and forth with us.
Oh, no. I'm speaking purely for fun. I love shooting 308.
Do you feel as if you wouldn't have cut your teeth on? You did cut your teeth on 308, correct?
Yeah, for sure.
Do you feel as if you'd have cut your teeth on something else, you would still enjoy the 308?
Fair question.
I want to pose something to you. Like you, if I'm absorbing this properly, you enjoy the 308 because it's not like super easy.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun.
For all intents and purposes, it's a turdy cartridge, but also, you could do the same thing with a 223 or 5.56 or 77 grains.
And I used to
employ that same kind of challenge and everything else with just a micro percentage of the recoil.
So to be fair, I did used to shoot. Actually, one of my favorite rifles I sold to my buddy was a 20-inch AR upper in 5.56, mm-hmm. And I love that. That thing was a great, it shot tiny groups. We shot it, I don't know, 700 or 800 yards. I had this back when I was in Georgia. And when I moved out to Washington is when I parked the 223. Right,
yeah. It's just like out here. Like, I parked the 223s a lot more when I moved out here because, you know, fucking wind is a thing out here for real.
No, and then longer the range splash shots wasn't and all there. That stuff.
Yes. Now, I could get behind. So the guys who still, I'm Judge on 308, as far as splash goes, like you're chunking a big lead blade down there, and it's gonna kick up something. I can get behind that because I can 100%.
It'll move the plate a little bit.
From the standpoint of, like, I primarily shoot small shit, long ranges. Like, I mean, the first time I shot beyond 1,000 yards was with a 10 twist 2250 I loaded with 73 grain hornets.
Wow,
literally my varmint rifle. And like lots of 20 to 50 until 22 Creed became a thing. Shot tons of 22 Creed, 6 Creed, 6 Arc, 224 Valkyrie, 223. Like, I primarily play in the small stuff. And I'm kind of the same way. It's like, if you could take a 223 and consistently train out to longer ranges and get really good at reading wind and everything else, when you do swap over to like a, let's just jump into the 6.5 Creedmoor, the 6.5 PRC, 7 PRC, 300 PRC, and take those hunting, obviously with adequate amounts of training, it does prepare you. Like, it is good practice to shoot something that's going to get pushed around a lot in the wind, to where you really have to rely on, however good or bad it may be, your wind reading skills. Yeah. Basically, it prepares you for that. But I'm just not willing to take up all that recoil of a 308.
No, to your point, like, right with a 16-inch barrel, and you got a really fun time.
Well, I was going to say, I think we can officially recognize your position as valid on the TPH podcast, specifically because
you tend to favor semi-autos.
Love it.
And most, I think, non-traditional chambered AR-10 platforms are cringe. So when you get into a lot of the oddball stuff that you might get in like a bolt gun, like the world, yeah. Like if you're primarily shooting bolt guns, the world's your oyster in terms of like caliber selection. Whereas really, I mean, 6.5 AR, 308 AR, cool. But like you really get into like finicky territory past that and some of the